This is Sylvia Busis and my partner, Eleanor Mermelstein. We are here today on Monday, February 4th, 1985, to begin an interview with Frieda Alber. We are doing this for the Oral History 2 project of the Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women. Frieda, do you mind reaffirming your address for
us? Not at all. 4625 Fifth Avenue, Apartment 808, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15213.
Frieda, I think we might as well start at the beginning and find out where you were born and tell us a little bit about your parents and your family. All of this, you know, ties into what makes Pittsburgh what it is today.
All right. Well, I was born in Pittsburgh. I was born right here in Pittsburgh. And my parents were Anna and Albert Kazen, C-A-Z-E-N. And my father was a kosher butcher and extremely well-known, I guess, in the Jewish community. I suppose he was the dean of the kosher butchers. Although I must say that with all due respect, he was an Orthodox man, but he did not inhibit me or the rest of his family in any way whatsoever. My mother, he came, by the way, from what was at the time that he left was Lithuania, and he had a rather traumatic experience getting to the United States. I don't know whether you want me to go into that.
Oh, I think we would. I think we would.
Well, he was just 15 years old, and, you know, there was conscription by the Russians for young people into the army. His father had been picked off the streets my grandfather was 15 years old, and because he was inordinately handsome and inordinately tall, he was over 6 feet, he was put into the Russian Imperial Guards, and he was kept in the Russian army for 25 years. So his family never got to see him, and when he came back to the small village from which he had been taken, he was past 40, and that was when he married my grandmother, my paternal grandmother.
What was the name of the
of the town? Oh dear, I do know, but let me think.
That's
I
okay.
Can recall
that's
it a little
fine.
Later.
That's
I
fine.
Did know. My father was the youngest of three. He had two older sisters, and when he reached that age, the process was still being done to recruit members for the army. He escaped, thanks to one sister, the oldest one, giving him the money that was for her dowry, because, of course, the family was very, very poor. And he escaped with another young man, and they got to the border between, just on the edge, I guess, of the Russian border and Germany, and they were fired on by the Russian guards. The young man with whom my father was traveling was killed, but my father escaped and got onto a boat in Hamburg and got to the United States. He had relatives here in Pittsburgh, and that's how he came to Pittsburgh.
Do you happen to know what year that was that he came to?
Dad came in, I think it was in about 1902 or 3. I don't remember exactly. I know he was engaged to my mother in 1908 because I have a bracelet, a gold coin bracelet. That time they mutilated gold, and on the reverse side is the date of their engagement when he gave it to my mother. So that was September 1908. So I think he might have got here about 1902 or 1903. And he came and stayed with a relative and learned the trade of butchering, kosher butchering, from his cousin, Mr. Walter, who lived with him for a while. Regrettably, he picked up typhus, Dad did, and he was hospitalized for some time, and they thought he was not going to be able to make it, but fortunately, he did. And he opened his own business after he stayed for a year or so. And
so he was something like 16 when he opened it up?
No, he was older than that. He was maybe 18 or 19 by that time.
And what did he call it?
Kazin's Meat Market. And it was on Logan Street, which was quite the center of Jewish activities at that period of time. My mother was from a different milieu. Her parents came from the Ukraine in the town called Poltava, which was the seat of the summer residence of the Tsar. And as a matter of fact, they lived right across the road from the Tsar's palace. My grandfather, my maternal grandfather, had a soda kvass, they called it, a manufacturing plant that was operated by bands of gypsies. And they were fairly well integrated into the community and quite well-to-do. My mother remembers that my grandmother was not very observant. Anyway, they decided to leave the United States because other members of my grandfather's family had already left the country, and they decided to follow. But as I said, that they were fairly well-to-do, and they traveled for about 6 months in Europe before they landed in Pittsburgh. And when they landed in Pittsburgh, they came because my grandmother's brother, my great-uncle, was Harry Meitlein, who owned a cap and hat factory here in Pittsburgh. And so that was a natural place for them to come. There was another brother of my grandmother's who lived in New York and was in the real estate business. And he was the first Uncle Doyne. Simon Doyne was his name. He was the first Jew to ever be more than a 32nd degree Mason in New York. He was an entrepreneur. He was the kind of a man who made a fortune a number of times over and lost a fortune a number of times over. But he had a good life. Anyway, my grandfather decided to work for his brother-in-law, Harry Meitlein, going around selling hats. Everybody wore derbies and that sort of thing in those days. And they used to come in real tall, they had them piled in cases, one on top of the other. And they would push these things down the street. Well, my grandfather was a sophisticated man, and that wasn't for him. So one day he just took the whole damn thing and dumped it into the Monongahela.
Oh, my. what was his name, Frieda?
Carl Sachs.
S-A-C-H-S.
And his name is on the... the building in which they set up for burial purposes on the cemetery, the Russian cemetery, and his name is on that wall as one of the founders of that particular cemetery, because that was one of the primary things, I think, that most immigrants did when they first came here, to find a place where they could rest when they did.
What's the name of the Russian cemetery?
It's called the Russian Cemetery.
Is it
on Route? Yeah. Oh yes, they're buried there. My uncle was buried there. It's up on off of Route 51, near the Shara Torah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just it's called, as far as I know, just the Russian
cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, they went into business for themselves, and they opened the Working Man's Ready-to-Wear place, first down on Congress Street, a little tiny place, and lived above that neighborhood, and that's where my mother lived. She was about 12 years old when she came to this country with her brother and a stepsister. And at that time, that neighborhood was a mixed Jewish and Italian neighborhood, and my mother was able to learn a little bit of Italian because there were so many Italian immigrants in the area. And she attended the public school that was down the street. Now, I think it was called Hancock School.
Is Congress Street also?
Oh, no, it's no longer there.
No. Was it in the hill?
It was below Wiley Avenue, down where the, I guess where the roadway comes from Webster down now, you know, the big old boulevard, that whole area in there. Mm-hmm. That's where she opened this first little store. And of course, life was very primitive, and it was certainly not the kind of life that my mother had lived in Russia or in Ukraine. Well, when she and my father married, and he was a very good-looking man, my dad was.
And what year were they married?
They were married in 1908. And do you know what? Your aunt, Mrs. Cohen, and your mother-in-law, Mrs. Busis, remember that your maternal, that would be your, no, your paternal grandmother, not yours, but Sydney's, paternal grandparents were friends of my grandparents, and they were invited to my mother's wedding.
Oh, my.
And Molly Cohen
tells
me about remembering that her mother got her a new fur coat, and that was the first day she wore it.
To the wedding.
That she wore to my mother's wedding.
Did we get your mother's first name?
Anna.
Anna.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe that's going too far back.
No, not at all. That feeling, you know, this is lost if we don't ask about it and record it.
I wished I remembered more, but regrettably, I don't know. My father, even my mother, wasn't too happy about talking about the early years because they were painful. After all, they left the country, my father did, under very adverse circumstances. And my mother, while she had a good enough time when she left the country, life was hard. I mean, it was primitive in the society. There were things that were not available to which they had been used to. They had a big home at that time, and she even remembers carpets, the heavy orientals being hung on the walls in order to keep out the cold because there was no central heating. It was only wood-burning fireplaces. So that life was pretty difficult. I mean, anyway, she married my father, and he had already opened this business on Logan Street, which was the center of Jewish commerce.
Where did they live when they were first married?
My father owned the building, and they lived upstairs. They had
that was kind of the pattern.
That was the pattern. Yes, right. You had the kitchen behind the store. That's not where their kitchen was. It was on the second floor. Up the steps, and they had a very comfortable apartment up there. I still remember it as a little girl. I also remember that up on that high elevation, we had an enormous yard. Oh, I guess it was as big as all of this. And my father always had a sukkah there.
Oh,
we were able to eat out. He had a wooden one with the regulation leaves to cover the top. And I think we even had electricity, a light that came out from the kitchen because it was on the kitchen level, and it was easy for them to take the food from the kitchen to the sukkah. But it was all cemented, and we had a living room, and we had three bedrooms, we had full-time help, we had a dining room, we had a kitchen, and there was a third-floor apartment. For a while, my grandparents lived on that third floor. And then when my parents were first married, my father had the butcher shop on Locust Street, and my mother ran a little ready-to-wear store on Wiley Avenue down near Congress Street. Oh, yes, she was a very smart gal. She was a very unusual gal. And she said that's where she used to keep me when I was first born. I was born in about 3 years after they were married. And I guess by the time they had their second child, I have a brother, she gave up this store, and business just progressed. So I may not be recalling this exactly, because maybe at the time that they were first married, they did not own the whole building in which my father had his butcher shop. It was because they then lived, I think, over the little store that my mother operated on Wiley Avenue. But then he bought that building, and we moved, and it must have been 2 or 3 years after they were married, because my brother and I are only 26 months apart. So we were living there for all the time.
So they're just the two of you?
Just two, right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And your brother's name is?
Kazen, C-A-Z-E-N. Where do we go from here?
Well, you're talking about growing up in the hill, and who went to Hancock School?
My mother.
Your mother.
My mother went to Hancock School.
And where did you go?
I went to Franklin School, because at that time we were living on Logan Street, and that was a school that was just a block up the street. Mm-hmm. And it was a very pleasurable experience.
Tell us about Franklin School.
Well, it was, I don't know if you can remember, the pattern of the schools at that time, they were tremendously fireproof brick buildings. And I don't remember too much. I remember my kindergarten teacher, because I loved Miss Emma, and she was wonderful, a wonderful person. And then I didn't have too many people to play with. There were a few people, but we went away a good bit. I mean, my family would go away for the summer. I can remember that we went to Cambridge Springs, you know, at the beginning.
You summered at Cambridge Springs.
We summered at Cambridge Springs, and I can remember the carriages in which the horses pulled for the outing in the afternoon, and I can remember Reuben Balder, that's Morris Balder's father, Jimmy Balder, Jimmy Balder's grandfather,
right,
was my father's cousin. He's the one with whom he lived when he came to this country, coming to visit Mother and at Cambridge Springs when Dad couldn't come out, and taking us for a ride in this buggy in the country. And then when my father would come, we would go the rounds. They would go to drink all the fountains. You know, it was like a European spa. Have you ever been there?
I've not.
You have. Well, then in those days they had these, a sort of a porch area with rocking chairs, and then you would stay, you know, they had 3 meals a day, and you would stay and have your meals, and then you would make the rounds of these various springs that had different kinds of sulfuric and other kinds of waters, and you would drink so many glasses of each kind every day. So that was the routine.
Did the children partake in the waters too, or?
Oh, well, they were nasty tasting. There was one that wasn't so bad. I remember drinking that, but other than that, I don't remember that exactly. And the sulfuric fumes that would come out of some of those spas were pretty awful. But anyway, so we used to go, and I remember that was quite an occasion. We would go by train, and at that time, you had steamer trunks. And I can remember my mother loading those trunks that had to be picked up by the wagons that were driven by horses, lifted up and taken and put on the wagons, and I don't know how they were delivered to the, I guess we went by train. That was when we were real little. But then we got to Atlantic City, and I knew how we got there. But I don't remember too much about the how those trunks got to Cambridge Springs. They must have gone by horse and buggy, a wagon and horse, and we must have gone by train. My father had a little, one of those first automobiles, you know, the kind that had the isinglass sides, and you let them down when it rained, and you rolled them up, and they had the doors that opened. I remember once my father, unaware, caught my finger in the my middle finger in the hinge of the car door. But anyhow, I don't think he always drove us. He was a rotten driver. But we did have the car, but I think we must have gone by train.
And then later you started going to Atlantic City.
Yeah, then
was that for the summer also?
That was during the summer, yeah. We'd go by family. It was really very fancy. My mother knew how to live the good life. I mean, we always had a stateroom, so the chief, my father, used the lower berth, a double one, and my brother and I used the upper one, or my mother, I guess, one, and then there was a side one, you know? But anyhow,
we went to Atlantic City by train.
We went to Atlantic City by train with that damn trunk of my mother. had the pack. I suppose I shouldn't use any profanity.
That is quite all right.
But anyway, that's what we did during the summer in state.
And do you remember much about the neighborhood when you were going to school then? Was it
not too much, but I skipped four times in public school.
Four times?
Yes, so that I was pretty young when I got out of high school.
Where did you go to high school?
I went to high school, Fifth Avenue High School, because by that time my father had given up the Logan Street store, and he had opened up on Fifth Avenue, 1227 Fifth Avenue, and he had not only the retail business, he also had a wholesale business in there, and then he had Rich Bums, which was the man who ran the delicatessen, or the dairy counter, because it was separated since it was all
right.
Observed kashrut. And then there was a shechet that took care of the chicken and the geese, and his wife tried so hard to speak English, she had trouble. She'd say, "Good." When somebody say they would like a particular size duck or goose, she said, "Go downstairs, my husband will kid you." So that. I remember that. Although I was not active in the business at that time at all. I mean, I didn't do anything in the business. It was all set up by the way I was going to. Well, how far back do you want me to go about my life?
And anything that you're recalling that you think would be
well, better? I started to be interested, I guess, in theatrics or something pertaining to theatrics at a very, very young age. I remember, and this is, I think, I don't know whether I remember because I remember or because it was told to me so many times. I started out wanting to be a dancer. And I told you that my grandparents had this ready-to-wear store on Congress Street.
Right.
And at that time, they would show their wares outside, and they were real fancy. They had a glass case in which they put their wares, so that if you didn't want to go into the store, you could see some of the items that they carried by looking at this big glass showcase that stood outside the window. Well, when I was about 3 years old, I was dancing on the street in front of the showcase, and I fell through, and I really damaged my arm. I bled like a stuck pig. There's the scar that I had as a result of that little escapade. There were a lot of incidents.
That's an energetic dance you were doing for you.
Right. And then I was in school plays, when I was in first in elementary school, and I started to study piano, and I was a student of Jenny Gluck, who was Cantor Bloom, who was the cantor of the B'nai Israel Synagogue. Well, they were friends of my grandparents, Cantor Bloom and Mrs. Bloom, and I started to study with Jenny, the oldest daughter, who married Sam Gluck. And I guess I wasn't too bad because my mother was very friendly with Dr. and Mrs. Litchfield. That's the Litchfield who was an uncle to the Litchfield that was a chancellor at Pitt. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Litchfield had been a concert pianist. They were invited on several occasions and came to our house for dinner, and my parents were very generous. They bought me a beautiful grand piano for my 12th birthday, and I played, and she was very anxious for me to go to, all this seems so strange because I don't do any of these things. Life patterns change, and you do things in bits and pieces, you know. Anyhow, she wanted me to study piano seriously, and she wanted me to go to school in the morning and study at home in the afternoon, but that wasn't my cup of tea.
Now, who wanted you to do this?
Mrs. Litchfield, yes. Right. But it wasn't my cup of tea. But she did suggest that I change teachers at that time, so I went to Alvin Dice, who was a very well-known and a very fine piano teacher here in Pittsburgh. So I changed from Jenny Blue to, by the time I changed, she was Jenny Blue. I went to Alvin Dice and studied with him for some years into high school. And I was soloist for the commencement exercises at Fifth Avenue High School when I graduated. But I also was interested in theater, and I had the leading role in the senior class play,
which was
Commander's Walk.
You did start early, Frida.
Yeah, I did.
I think we're approaching the end of this side, and we'll possibly just hold it then till we turn. It's distracting to cut it off in the middle. We can go on. After Fifth Avenue High School.
Well, it's got to be before Fifth Avenue High School, because it was in Fifth Avenue High School that Chester B. Story, who was well known in the city as the English teacher of Fifth Avenue High School, I didn't know, he requested a scholarship for me to Carnegie Mellon, but Carnegie Tech then, Carnegie Institute of Technology, and I got it. So I was about 15 and a half.
They had skipped you so much.
I was about 15 and a half when I was admitted to Carnegie Tech. Like, then I entered in that fall in September.
What year was that?
1927.
That's a very competitive school. That was a big honor that you got a scholarship.
Well, I had been acting in the summertime, too. I had gone to a girls... My mother and father sent me to a girls' camp in New Hampshire when I was 12 years old, and I went there for four successive summers, and that was when I was just in beginning high school.
What was the name of that camp?
Eagle Point.
Oh, my goodness.
It was operated by Aaron Richmond from Cleveland. Remember the name?
I remember Eagle Point.
Where
all the fancy girls went when I was growing up.
Well, the brothers' camp was Stinson. Well, I started going there when I was 12 years old, and I went for four summers. And the drama teacher there was Lillian Heidemann, who had acted with Dusa and part of the Cleveland Playhouse. And I worked with her for those years.
That was your major interest in camp?
Oh, no. Heck no. I won a broad jump medal, and I won a horseback riding medal, and swimming. No. I mean, I was active in all the activities. But that was one in which I could feel so dramatic. I remember they were going on a horseback trip, which was a three-day thing, and I had been rehearsing for one of the big productions that they were doing, and I had the lead role. And I was dying. I was crazy about horseback riding. I was dying to go on this trip. And Mrs. Heidemann said, "Well, Frida, if you go on this trip, you cannot be in the play." So that was the first big thing that broke my heart. I was giving up something that I wanted to do for the theater. You know? At that time, it seemed very important. However, that's what I stuck with that. So by the time I was 15 and Chester B. Story at Fifth Avenue High School, gee, I haven't talked about any of these things for so long.
It's wonderful.
Anyway, he requested the scholarship, and it was granted. He never told me. I didn't know until I got the notification that I had been accepted. But of course, the scholarship would be granted, let's put it that way, if I would pass the entrance examinations for the department.
It was like an audition.
Yes, the audition lasted a couple of days. And I got into this maelstrom of very sophisticated people. I was a baby. I can remember that my mother thought, well, you just have to look nice. And so I had a little dress that was silk, and it was blue and white, and it had little tiny checks in it, a little tiny silk dress with a high waist and a Peter Pan collar, and I wore socks and Mary Janes.
Well, you know, Mary Janes.
I had to go to the interview. If you can imagine that. Of course, we had to have things ready for audition. But is that still hot?
What did you select for your audition?
I don't remember altogether, but I know that I must have selected something from Commander Walk, because it was one I had just, the senior play I had just done.
Right.
And there was something else from it's not a Pirandello thing, but it was something that I had done at camp, and in which I was the Tiarette, and it was tragedy, you know, like Cavalieri Rusticano or Pagliacci, but that's the kind of thing it was. And so I did that. I mean,
there you were in your Mary Janes.
In my Mary, you can imagine.
Oh, my, yeah.